Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Yes, sir.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. How are you? We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. We are looking over beautiful downtown Chicago. Remember, we do this show Saturdays, too, from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. And remember that on Friday, we're doing this show from Cork and Kerry. We started the baseball season there. We're going to end the baseball season there, more or less. It's the Cubs and the Sox. You'll hear our coverage Friday afternoon on WGN Radio at 2:30, first pitch a little after 3. So for the Sox and Cubs game, we're going to actually be out there doing our shows from 6 a.m. all the way until that pregame coverage at 2:30. So if you are going to be on the south side, make plans to be on the south side. And see us at Cork and Kerry. We'll be there on Friday. And Ms. Garris, that Cork and Kerry visit of ours is sponsored by somebody or another. It's sponsored by, who's the visit on the red line thing?
Virtue sponsor? Cider and Goose Island.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Goose Island. Thank you very much. And Virtue Cider. I want to try some of that stuff out there. I think the CEO or the head brewer or somebody in that company is going to be there for that broadcast, too. And who doesn't love themselves a little Goose Island? So we'll do that as well. Our new news click today at WGNradio.com is...
Art Burton, Ernie, gay. A. Yes. B. Probably, but it doesn't matter. C. Probably not, but it doesn't matter. D. No.
Yeah. There's a lot of news clicks we could have done today. Our daily web poll question, we went there.
But what makes someone gay? Having intercourse
right.
with the same
right.
sex,
yeah.
but
or
they
is it
can't
just,
have intersex.
Because they don't have the...
I just got confused with words.
They're not anatomically correct. But is it what's... if you're gay, whether or not you have intercourse with somebody, you know what your orientation is. So I guess the only people that could answer this are Bert and Ernie. And that's where, in fact, you can get a sense of it. Because the guy that created Bert says, I did not create him to be gay, but the guy that wrote Bert and Ernie, who did the stories, based it on his relationship with another man, the sort of friendship, feelings, attitude, personalities they had. So the guy that was writing Bert and Ernie said that they're modeled after gay men, but the guy that created the character says they're not. So there's that.
That's why I think your middle two options were
the best,
because you wouldn't know from watching the show. No one talks about it, so why does it matter?
That's what Oz says. Frank Oz, the guy that created Bert, he said, you know, would this have changed anything? And I think the answer to that is no.
Oh, I thought you meant Dr. Oz. I'm like, wow, he weighed in on this.
But you know, I think it's okay if you have all along thought, oh, these are two guys and they're a couple, and that was helpful to you. There's no problem with that. And if me as a straight guy never thought about their orientation, you know, I wasn't focused on a couple of men, I was just watching a couple of Muppets and they're these fun characters. And if I asked, I would have said, God, what a stupid question, but I would have said, oh, I guess they're straight, but they don't seem to have women in their lives. you know, that would be okay too, right? There's no wrong answer to this. There's no wrong answer to this. The same way two people walking down the street, you don't know what their orientation is, maybe. So you can like them or not like them. You can be friends with them. They can be friends with each other. You don't need that information. You do not need that information. But now people are taking sides. So our options are, yep, or probably, but it doesn't matter. Or probably not, but it doesn't matter, which is honestly, I think, how I voted on this. Or no, they're not gay. Shut up, what a stupid question, John. I'm now turning the radio off is an option we didn't put there, but I know that it is.
there it is.
Well, so there you go. Enough said. Erica Harold is the Republican candidate for the Illinois Attorney General, and she is running against Kwame Raoul. And she's going to join us, hopefully, a little after 2:30. I say hopefully in case she's heard what I've said so far. She might not like it. But I'm not the only one who said the truth meter doesn't favor her on this one. In the Sun-Times today, they have the truth meter out for both Kwame Raoul and Erica Harold's ads, both of them running for Illinois Attorney General. I want to repeat my statement just before the news with Steve Bertrand. Isn't it a little ironic and sad? These are two people running for Attorney General of the state of Illinois. That is, who is the arbiter for the people with respect to the law. These are people who would be the truth seekers, truth tellers. They're the top attorney for the state of Illinois. They're your representative. They're going to do right by you. And to get that office, one or both of them are telling lies. And, you know, we all just kind of shrug. Hey, well, that's how it goes. That's how you run for office. Come on, John, get with the program.
You got to do a little bad for the better good, right?
Yeah. One quick segue here, then we'll pick up some phone lines. Is Stacey St. Clair going to join us, Ms. Garris? I thought she was going to be on, right? Let's get her in here, too. But that's the question Mary Schmeek asked in today's Chicago Tribune. She, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Chicago Tribune, reached out to a friend who she goes to sometimes. I want to know who that person is. And the woman said, in a perfect world, we allow that some men in their youth do terrible, horrible things, and 30 years later, they are repaired individuals. They're better, they're capable, they're competent. We should allow forgiveness and for people to yet be a Supreme Court justice, say. I'm extrapolating only a tiny bit there, but that was the gist of it.
You know, I always make excuses for people who do things when they're young. Well, that when they're in college or high school, that's when they're meatheads, and you know it just happens. I don't know where I am on this whole thing, but I mean, it is true that you are. That's the time in your life when you're supposed to do stupid things. I don't know that excuses.
That's not the
them.
Time in the life you're supposed to rape.
No,
drunk
he did, and he didn't. He wasn't accused of raping a girl. But I agree with that.
No, you know
totally
what? I
agree with that, John.
Pardon me. I'm thinking of in Mary Schmeek's column. She described a scene where young men did rape a girl at a party. I conflated the two. And later on, this man went on to be a nice guy. And Mary Schmeek knows this is her personal story. Mary was not raped, but she describes a party she was at where that happened. And one of the guys confessed to her, and he's not a terrible person, she says. And I think that's sort of what we're wondering, if we can allow Kavanaugh to be a guy who attempted to or sexually assaulted someone. And I guess, or is she charging him with sexual assault when he groped her and tried to have sex with her? Is that
sexual assault? That is a form of sexual assault,
yes. So if that's the truth, just imagine for a minute that you will allow that to be part of his personal history. And would you then say he is still the stand-up guy that you think he is today? The problem for him, though, is that now he's, if that were the scenario, now he's lying about it. So that's another sin. That's another layer of thing that we have to process. But imagine if he had said, at some point along the way, that's part of my history. That's why I went into law. I want to fight for victims. I feel terrible about this. Would we have allowed that? I don't know the answer to that. I want to go to the Jason Van Dyke trial. Stacey St. Clair has been writing about it in the Chicago Tribune. You'll read her story on page one, and you can follow her online, chicagotribune.com. Stacey, it's John. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I've been watching and listening to the testimony today, and much of it is from the medical examiners describing the wounds to Laquan McDonald, correct?
Right. It took, she just finished up with the 16th wound just like a minute ago, and basically, it took nearly 2 hours for her to walk the jury through every single gunshot wound that Laquan McDonald received that night. And there were 24 wounds in all, because there are 16 entry wounds and then 8 exit wounds.
Why did they do this? Why did they take that time to describe the shots?
Well, I mean, I think there's many things at play here. First of all, they want to show the jury just how bullet-ridden this young man was, and how many bullets were fired into him. They also are going to have a debate, I think, later on with the defense. You could tell it was sort of gearing up to that, as to which bullets were shot when and which bullets caused his death. But the medical examiner from Cook County said, you know what, you can't tell from you know, from the examination, which order the bullets were, you know, fired into his body and right. which, you know, shots ultimately led to his death.
She said because not only is the victim moving, but the shooter is moving, and it's hard to know the order in which
Correct.
The shots were received. But do we know or are they offering an opinion on when and where Laquan McDonald died?
That's another fight that they've clearly been having all morning. And the prosecution really wants to push the idea that, you know, he was still alive and people were still trying to save him, you know, up until he was at Mount Sinai Hospital. And they had a paramedic come on and say that, you know, yes, he did have a pulse when he was in the ambulance. Now, his heart stopped beating en route to the hospital, but he did have a pulse. And then the defense is sort of pushing back on the idea that, like, you know, he was dead almost from the get-go. And you know, part of the reason they're fighting over that is because if you look at the video of the shooting, if you kind of watch it to the end, you see a lot of police officers standing by around the body of Laquan McDonald and nobody offering him aid. And in fact, the only one who does is a Cook County sheriff's officer. And he testified yesterday. Remember that he came and he sort of leaned down and said to Laquan, like, hang in there. I can hear the ambulance coming. And he can hear Laquan's breathing. So now I think it's a perception. Like, you know, if no one in the video from the Chicago Police Department is offering Laquan McDonald aid, does that speak to the, you know, the mindset of what was going on that night?
Hey, Stephanie, it's Steve. And I want to follow up on that. Why is that relevant when we're considering whether or not Van Dyke murdered Laquan McDonald? Why is what the other officers did relevant to his trial?
Well, I think I don't know that in the end it is, you know, legally relevant, but I think there is a perception that, you know, and Jason Van Dyke doesn't, you know, try to offer aid either, but just that nobody cared about this boy, this 17-year-old, you know, and I think that furthers the perception, so they're doing their best to sort of minimize that. Does it have anything to do whether, you know, Jason Van Dyke had a reasonable fear for his life and was, you know, had the authority to shoot Laquan McDonald? You know, no, it doesn't. But it looks very bad on that video. And I think both sides know it and they want to play up to that.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they didn't. I mean, you know, I guess each side gets their turn. But mm-hmm. if I'm Jason Van Dyke's attorneys, I can see how this 2 hours of bullet by bullet. I mean, so the shots took 6 seconds? No, you just went 2 hours through this young man's injuries. And they show the autopsy photos. You see his body with a giant yeah. stitch across the chest. And you see, I guess that was from the autopsy, but then the bullet holes in his chest. His body's riddled with wounds.
Yeah, I mean, they cracked his chest at the hospital, according to testimony today. But yeah, I mean, it looks awful. You see that, you know, the exit and entrance wound of every bullet that exited his body, and then for every bullet wound that, you know, was lodged in, and you see an X-ray of his yeah. body that's, like, filled with bullets. So, it's a very rough thing for jurors to go through. In fact, when you talk to jurors after murder trials, they'll say whatever the verdict was, that the worst day they had was the day when they just had to look at those autopsy photos, because most people in their lives, in their everyday lives, oh, yeah. don't come across these photos.
I was thinking that as I was watching CLTV today or listening to the audio on our radio station. Sometimes mm-hmm. I'd hear something and then I'd run over to a TV screen to see and almost wished that I hadn't. Mm-hmm. What's also just, and to see Bertrand's point, I'm not sure this has anything to do with whether or not Jason Van Dyke pulled the trigger and somewhere there or in route Laquan McDonald died. I mean, none of the what I'm about to say is changed by that fact, but the lack of humanity that the police officers showed this gurgling 17-year-old kid on the street is upsetting to me. It's hard to imagine. That part of the story is hard to fathom.
Well, but that then speaks to what the prosecutors are trying to convey, that there was a lack of humanity that night, and when Jason Van Dyke fired his gun at Laquan McDonald, and so, you know, it just sort of perpetuates that idea.
Yeah, but I could be an attorney someday, Stacey, because here again, they could say, no, but that doesn't change the fact that he was wielding a knife and was a danger to society. Anybody's passing is going to be unpleasant, particularly under these sorts of circumstances, but that doesn't change the fact that he had to fire his weapon the first time. So John Walsh, one of the officers, was he Joe Walsh or John
Joseph,
Walsh?
Joseph, yeah. Joseph.
Was he Van Dyke's partner?
He was Van Dyke's partner that night, but they had only worked together on two occasions.
Two occasions, yeah, okay. So he testifies, and let me take a quick break. Come back and answer this question if you have the time, and that is, was it a mistake to put Walsh on the stand? Stacey St. Clair writes for the Chicago Tribune. Stacey, you are following. You are at the courthouse, the Officer Van Dyke trial. Mm-hmm. Was it a mistake to put Officer Walsh on the stand, since it seems to me, that's the prosecution, that he more or less supported the actions of Jason Van Dyke?
You know, I think prosecutors are in a very tough situation, and I think Walsh's testimony yesterday showed exactly why. They have to prosecute a case in which their eyewitness police officers don't believe there should be a prosecution, right? They don't support it, and they believe the actions were justified. So, you know, they have officers are sort of hostile witnesses almost. I mean, they're not declared such, but, you know, for all intents and purposes, they are. And they need those officers to get on stand and tell the jury, yes, I did not fire my gun. I did not, you know.
Wasn't there a scene where one of the officers was asked to, help me, Stacey, but identify the, was it the victim or the perpetrator?
Yeah, so Joseph Walsh was on the stand, and there was a still image of Laquan, you know, walking down the street, and you've seen it. It's the, you know, the infamous video, and there's in the image you can see Laquan, and you can see Van Dyke, and you can see Walsh. And so the prosecutor said, "Can you circle yourself in this picture?" And Walsh did. And then the prosecutor said, "Can you circle the defendant?" And he circled Laquan McDonald.
As a mistake, what's the relevance of that? Why are you guys talking
about
that?
Well, that speaks to what Stacey's saying, that the crime might have been on McDonald's behalf and not that he was shot. That he was
correct.
The bad guy here.
Correct. I mean, the get-go, you know, the defense said this whole incident was orchestrated and written and directed by Laquan McDonald. Laquan McDonald is on trial right alongside Jason Van Dyke. That is how this is shaking out.
Yeah.
And what does the he's former police officer now, but what does he do when asked to point out the defendant in the picture? He circles the person who ends up being fatally shot.
He also said, well, he was swinging his knife up high, and he was turning and looking in a sinister or vacant way at us, and yet the video doesn't support that. He said, well, that was our view. Maybe that was Van Dyke's view, too. But if I was the prosecution then, I would have given him the clicker or some button that would have said pause, and I would have rolled the video, and I said, okay, stop the video when he's doing what you are describing, because that does not appear in the video. I would call his BS, if you will. I know that sounds biased, but I mean, that's the case I would be trying to make if I was the prosecution. I would have said, okay, take us to the point in the video that shows what you're saying, because it's not there.
And the prosecutor did do that. There were some lawyers in the gallery that I spoke to who thought it should have been hammered home, you know, almost like you said, every second. Do you see it now? Is his arm raised now?
No, it's not.
Where's his arm now?
No, it's not. It never goes above the shoulder the way he described.
Right. And so does the jury look at that and go, he's not telling us the truth, and, you know, therefore, when he tells us, he's not telling us the truth about where the arm is, so therefore when he says there was a reasonable fear that led Jason Van Dyke to shoot, do we disregard that too? Or did he convince the jury successfully that, hey, I saw something because I'm in front of Laquan in this picture, and you've seen him from behind. I saw something you can't see.
That's what I would say, because maybe that is also the truth, right? Your colleague Eric Zorn kind of wondered along these lines in the Tribune today, too, that maybe what we see is either different than what he saw, and you know, what he saw is his own reality. Even if it's not borne out by the video, if that's what he saw, felt, or thought at the time, if, however, inaccurate or not compatible with the video, that may be his truth. That may actually be what he perceived to be going on at that moment, right?
Right. And I think, you know, if you Eric asked himself this question, I think he came down firmly that, you know, that yeah. they didn't see something different. But yeah, I think what you can perceive in a moment like that, it could be different from reality. But then if you see it wrong, was your fear, if you were wrong, was your fear reasonable?
Well, and his partner did not fire his weapon. You know, I mean, only Van Correct. Dyke fired his weapon. So even if they had that shared and imperfect view, why is it that nobody else pulled the trigger? Okay, Stacey, I got to let you go. I know you're
okay,
busy.
Okay, take care, guys.
Stacey, as always, thank you. Let's visit again, all right?
Anytime, guys. Talk to you later.
By the way, we are going to be, and by we, I mean me, but you're all invited. Elif, are you going to go to the Teddy Roosevelt show in November? Is that a yes? You're not sure? Okay. Well, let me know if you do.
Oh, what's sorry. I hadn't turned on my mic properly. I am.
Yeah. So Teddy Roosevelt's going to be on stage with us November 10th at 10:30 a.m. November 10th at 10:30 a.m. TR is coming back. We will discuss. I don't know if we have a title for this show, but I know that the thrust of it is going to be leadership. I think, you know, in the Senate, in the House, or the Supreme Court, in the presidency, in the mayor's office, we need leadership these days. And so that's what we're going to ask TR, who is one of the great political leaders of our history, and our history is going to be up on stage.
It's going to be called An Encounter with Teddy Roosevelt Williams.
Yeah, the marketing people came up with that because they're worried that you don't know what this is. So it's an encounter. Teddy and I are on stage. I'll interview him for a while. Then you get to ask questions. He's a fabulous storyteller. It's the funniest thing you'll see on stage. And it is so utterly believable. But it's also profound and important. As much as Teddy Roosevelt was a cowboy and a soldier, he was maybe the most literate president we've ever elected. And he'll be happy to tell you that, by the way. So, at the Blizzard Theater box office, you can call right now, 847-622-0300, 847-622-0300, or go to WGNradio.com/events. And there will be the details for our TR show, and that's going to be Saturday, November 10th at 10:30 in the morning. It'll be the Saturday after the election. Text messages about the Jason Van Dyke trial include, John, the real issue here is not how many bullets. It's that he was killed when he didn't need to be. And some of you say, yeah, it's because he didn't obey the police, and others say he should not have been shot at all. John, I thought the judge in the Van Dyke case ruled that the tape could not run during the officer's testimony. I'm not sure what they're talking about there, that the tape could not run during the officer's testimony. They've seen that tape over and over again, and they're also going to see, produced by the defense, a sort of animated video of what Van Dyke's view probably was. By the way, of the five squad cars that were there, all of them were supposed to be videotaping, but either because they didn't, none of them were operating their microphones, they had them with the batteries off, upside down in the glove box, they weren't working, so we have no sound. That would have been very helpful. What was said? What were the instructions? How clear were they, etc.? But we don't have video from all of the perspectives because either it wasn't working or they didn't engage them, and that's a shame, isn't it? John, did the officer have an automatic gun or did he have to squeeze each shot? My understanding is he had to squeeze each shot. John, I don't understand the question, why did no one else shoot? The fact that Van Dyke got there late could have contributed to his jitters more than officers that had been on the scene much longer. It's not vindication, but it's not murder either.
Okay, wait, that makes no sense. I mean, you're reading these, and I know you want to read from people, but think of that. What does that say? That says that the officers who were there and assessing the situation
right.
were calmer, and so it's an excuse that Van Dyke might have pulled right up and started shooting right away.
Well, Van Dyke, it wasn't cold and calculated, if I can read into this, Steve, but he thought, oh, my God, we've got a scene here. He's coming at us, bam, bam, bam.
But that's not what police officers do.
Or should do.
Or they don't.
Well, none of the other officers did. You get really angry, though, when you hear the testimony of some of these officers who are testifying with immunity because they themselves will face charges about lying, about obstructing justice. One quick call here, and then I want to go on to something else. Hey, Frank, you wanted to say what? You're on WGN. Hi, Frank.
Well, hi, John, King John. I've got a little background. I used to be at the 911 center for 30 years as a technician. And one of the tasks we had was making tapes of incidents. And one that comes to mind is, Frank, go record from 9 to 9:15. And a policeman shot a kid. Well, there was no reason a policeman shot a kid, so I took it upon myself to record earlier. What led up to it? And there was a call that came in of a kid on a bike with a gun. That's what put the policeman next to the kid. What did, you know, what happened before these five police cars converged on one person walking down the street? That's what we need to know. This is a court of public opinion. Our opinion doesn't matter in the real court, but it matters a lot to the police department and to the citizens of the city. It's terrible that a human being died, but what was the reason he died? What did he do before he was there with that knife? And well, I can tell you,
that's known.
More times than not,
your question
is
not rhetorical.
Very valid reason,
okay,
for all the policemen to be there.
Do you want the answer to those questions? Do you want to know what he did beforehand? I can tell you what he did beforehand.
What was it?
He slashed the tire of a squad car. He stabbed the windshield of a squad car and scraped it. He used a stolen Vetra card of a disabled veteran to take the L all around town for 24 hours or so. He smoked PCP, and he tried to carjack somebody's car.
Okay, sounds like a Boy Scout, right? So there are times when, you know, people, you know, the policemen are people. They have adrenaline, too.
Okay, so this is, I've thought about this. So suppose the prosecution concedes that. Suppose they say, okay, yes, all of that happened. Not a Boy Scout, bad guy, and we'll concede all of these crimes and all of these sins. He's a rotten 17-year-old kid. If the trial were for those crimes, if we were only putting him on trial for all of that, would we say, and as a result, we're going to have to kill you? Would that be a capital crime? Slashing the squad car tires or trying to carjack somebody or smoking PCP, riding illegally on Metra, on the L?
No, of course not.
So, of course not. Those aren't capital offenses. So when the police arrive on the scene, even if they knew all of this, which they did not, he could have been a Boy Scout. They still shot him. But if they knew that and we conceded that, would we then say, well, then you have to die now?
No, but... It becomes between two people then, Jason Van Dyke and Laquan McDonald. If Jason Van Dyke's life was threatened, he has authority to use lethal force.
Yeah, well, all right, good luck to them. You know, listen to me. Good luck to them proving that, because I just can't get over the video. And maybe they'll decide that it was different than what we've seen. It's a good thing that these things aren't tried by talk show hosts, because I do not know how this guy gets away with it. John, you cannot judge a defendant based on others. Fear is yours. Testimony yesterday indicated that it was a semi-automatic weapon. Thank you for that. I didn't hear that. John, maybe, although, does that mean you have to pull the trigger every time you do? On a semi-automatic weapon, you have to pull the trigger every time. It reloads automatically quicker, but you still have to go pull, 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 pull. That's my understanding. Maybe the officer felt threatened, John, but the force he used was undue. All right, it's 1:49. We'll continue to follow that. Violetta and Elif and I went to a very interesting and strange place. We have Instagrammed about it today. Is that how you say that, V? We have Instagrammed about
it.
We Instad it, and I want to tell you about where we went and what it will be like when you go there. Your world is about to change. Friends of mine in the studio are going to the Girl and the Goat for dinner. I said, when did you make your reservations? She says, over a month ago. Over a month ago, yeah. And they were able to get in at 4:30. Sorry. But that's good. I mean, better than a lot of folks got. Now's a great time to look into new windows and doors. Do it now before the cold weather hits. I'm recommending Next Door and Window. We really did have a great experience with them at my place. They took time to listen to us. They assessed our needs. They tailored the project based on our style and our budget. That's what they're going to do for you. Next Door and Window only specializes in windows and doors. So their installers are true craftspeople. They have experience doing this. Gary was our design and energy guy. He was terrific. Next Door and Window carries wood-clad fiberglass and vinyl windows. They'll have what you want, and they will maximize the efficiency, beauty, and value of your home. And look at this, 33% off the installation, 18 months interest-free financing, 1-800-NEXT-DOOR, call 1-800-NEXT-DOOR. I would do that now, or visit 1-800-NEXT-DOOR.com. We visited a little while ago. Oh, you want me to do the Steve Cochran promo? Steve, I suppose they'll be yapping away about the Kavanaugh hearing. He's talking politics tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. They'll break down the week with Bridget Gaynor and Pat Brady, as always. That's a good conversation tomorrow morning. 7 a.m. Steve Cochran here on WGN. So they have four Amazon Go stores in Seattle or the Seattle area. The first one they've opened up outside there is the new store over by Union Station in Chicago at Franklin and Madison. It's more like Monroe and Franklin, but
113 South Franklin.
So we all went over there. We took some video. We took some pictures. We'll post those later on. But this is the store where you download the app. You scan the app when you come in. You open it up on your phone. And then you sort of, boop, take it over a reader, like you're going into a ball game or something like that. And now you're in the store. Now, anything you take at the store will automatically be charged to you. There's no cashiers. There's no nothing. It's not a big store. It's like a 7-Eleven. It's a convenience store. They got snacks. They got Doritos and gum. They got soda and power drinks. They have wrap sandwiches and pre-made salads. And that's what it is. You go in, grab something, and you walk out. And it's weird. You have so many questions when you're in there. Like, how does it know what I'm taking, right? Because it knows you're in the store, boop. But then you're walking around and you go, hey, I'll just grab some chips. There's cameras everywhere.
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 Even in the refrigerator.
So when you reach in, and this won't help you completely, but this is what they told us. When you reach in and you grab something, it knows that's you. You now have that. I said, okay, what if I reach it and I put it in Violetta's bag and then Violetta or Elif walk out with it? Who gets charged? They say the person that grabbed it. So if you're in that store, you turn to somebody and go, hey, that thing up on the top shelf, could you grab it for me? I can't reach it. They're going to grab it and hand it to you and you're going to walk out. They get charged because it's the person that took it off the shelf. And the camera knows and somehow it associates the person that took it with the account.
It's probably because it sensed you next to it. It sensed your phone in your pocket or your bag or whatever, right in front of the shelf.
I guess.
But I think it's probably face recognition, too. Like, I think that they're following us around, scanning our face with what we grab.
So then we walked out and thought, oh, but there's something else I want. So then you go back in, boop, scan yourself back in. And they say if you take something off and then you decide you don't want it, you put it back on. And then it now knows that you don't have it. Well, really, it's amazing that they're able to do this. But so I'm just grabbing stuff. Well, this looks good. I'll grab that. And it's already working on me, right? I'm not paying attention. I don't have to pay. We'll just walk out. I walked out with $34 in snacks. I had two Go salads, two wrap sandwiches, two bags of chips. What did you get, Ms. Garris? You got the soup?
I had some good soup. It was tomato and some chewing gum. And the first thought that came in, that popped into my head was, it was like a light speed envisioning of myself at the cash register. And then I went, oh no, I don't have to do that today.
Yeah. So did you, what was your experience? Were you kind of jazzed by it?
I don't get excited that easily, but...
About this experience.
This was interesting. And my favorite part was that they had so many creative options for food.
How about you, V?
Yeah, I liked it. I wasn't moved one way or another. I just think it was convenient and easy, but I could see how you can get carried away. Because credit cards anyway feel like fake money sometimes. And then you don't even have to swipe a credit card or see the final total.
Right, right.
So you're just like, oh, yeah, that's like four. That's like five. But then
I guess you could check your phone because the app displays, but the receipt for me didn't calculate until well after I'd left the store. So I'm walking out wondering how much I spent.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I didn't know for a while. I mean, I could tell it was an $8 sandwich, et cetera, et cetera. But it would have been nice if I had known. But I was just shopping to see. I mean, really, at the end of the day, the convenience is swell. But then was the food good? And the food was fine. It wasn't bad. It was pre-made, and it was pretty good. It was fine. But here's the old man in me, you guys. It's just another very impersonal shopping experience. Who needs money and who needs humans?
Hold on. There was a lot of people, helpful people there helping to make sure that you had all the information you needed, had the app.
They'll be liquidated soon.
That's what I said to them. I said to this one woman, I said, so you've got a job here. Yep. I said, full-time, this will be a job for a while. It's kind of weird, isn't it? Because then why... What's the point of an automated store if you have humans helping you automate it?
By the way, everyone whose job is threatened loves to hear from other people saying, well, how long do you think you'll have?
I know.
They were stocking shelves. The shelves will not stock themselves.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
I got to turn my mic on. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Skyline Studio. We're downtown Chicago. 18 stories up, overlooking the lake and the river, and maybe you, if you're downtown, wave up to us. We're right here. On social media, I am WGN King John. Like me, look for me, love me there. And don't miss The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio on Thursdays. So we'll post a new edition of that tomorrow afternoon. We'll have a lot to talk about. Good Lord.
You always do the recommendations too late for me, by the way. I don't mean to bring this up on the air, but...
Yeah, I know. We usually go about a half hour. We usually start about 11 after, 12 after. That gets us to around 45, 46 after.
The hardest part is showing up with something to recommend, and then I just, you know, I walk out with it.
Well, but then you've got to then get ready for your show at noon, and
right.
We start at 11:15, so it's hard for you to do both.
I know.
My recommendation, I think this week, is again going to be Fear, the Woodward book. I finished it last night.
You're going to do it 2 weeks in a row?
I haven't seen the bylaws, but I might. Exactly. I know, that's cheating, isn't it, V? I'll tell you what, though. I just finished the book last night. The last chapter of the book is maybe the best. You don't know this either about the investigation into Donald Trump and his interaction with the Russians. But Trump's team... had, until this book went to print anyway, been very cooperative with Mueller. That is, they did turn over millions of documents. They did allow the testimony of 30-some people, and the president himself really wanted to cooperate. He said both things, but when you read the book, as he's talking to his attorney, he's like, no, John Dowd, I want to testify. And Dowd was leery about that. You know, he's not sure what we have to gain by you testifying, Mr. President. And when Mueller's people intimate that they might subpoena the president, Dowd gets very angry and says, really, we've been doing nothing but cooperating. We've given you every document you've wanted. We've highlighted documents. We've organized things. He says, remember, there were times where when asked to cooperate, the FBI would say, yeah, you can have the document. It's in one of those warehouses. And it would take years to find things. Imagine handing 1.2 million documents or pages of documents over to the Mueller team and saying, yeah, go ahead and find it. But they organize things. The Trump side has done everything you'd hope they would do in an investigation like this. And so Trump wants to testify too. And Dowd says, no, don't testify. He says, why not? He says, because... And then they start to talk a little bit about a perjury trap. That is, maybe you'll say something and it'll be misinterpreted. So then they came up with this, and again, some of this you know, but it's just interesting to see it laid out by the principals chronologically. But so then they said, all right, here's what we'll do. This is what they pitched to Mueller's team. You send us the 44 questions you want, or the 18 questions that you want him to respond to. And then we'll sit down and we'll write out the responses. And then we'll come meet you guys, and then we'll have the interview. You'll ask the questions, we'll read the answers. And that will be the way it's done. That way, we'll know the answers to the questions. If you ask for something we can't remember, we get a detail wrong, now we'll know. We'll get it all right. But there's not going to be a lot of follow-up, and we're going to control the topic of conversation. And Mueller said, this has never happened. And then they say, fine, then subpoena the president. See how that works out. So that's what they were holding out for. They were arguing back and forth about would the president testify and what would that look like. And in the back of Dowd's mind, he's the president's attorney, is this. The president does not adhere to the truth. He uses some expletives when he describes Trump's tether to honesty. Boy, there's a euphemism. But he said, you're a liar. Not always to, not to the president directly, but in the back of his mind, he's going, this guy tells lies. Now, he also tells this truth to Donald Trump. His attorney does. He said, you're not a bad guy. And you don't think you did anything wrong. And I don't think you did anything wrong. There's no perjury here. There's no collusion. There's no collusion here. There's no obstruction. But if you get going, you'll start saying stuff. And if we turn in this affidavit, this question and answer, so here's what you've submitted to the FBI is the truth. This is your sworn testimony. And then they call you in and you just want to talk and you want to defend yourself. You might end up saying things that are in conflict with what you've otherwise sworn to. It's a perjury trap for somebody like Donald Trump. He said, let's do a role play. I'll ask you some questions the way Mueller's team will. You'll be Donald Trump. Trump says, great. So they're plowing along. Fact, fact, question, fact, question, fact. But then Trump's starting to get agitated and he starts to percolate. You can just imagine playing him. He's a 12-year-old boy and he's got a Navy. So they're asking him questions and he's getting angry and angry. And the next thing you know, he's just like, just riffing the way he will. And he goes, see, Mr. President, that's why you can't testify. You're going to kill yourself. You're going to kill yourself. He said, if I were your physician, and I said, here's the course of action. You need to take these pills and do these things to live. And you said, I wouldn't do that. Then I would quit as your physician. I mean, if you're not going to take this doctor's advice, get another doctor. But this is how you'll live. It's the same way as your attorney. If you won't do what I'm telling you to do, I will resign because I can't represent you. I'm representing you and you're not taking my advice. I cannot represent you if you insist on testifying. Trump wanted to testify and Dowd resigned. The last sentence in the book is he wished he had told them that he was a bleeping liar, because that's the problem with Trump. Even when he may have the truth on his side or the belief that he's right, he's congenital. He's a congenital elephant. I'm not sure what congenital means. You'll need to look that up for me. But
good, because I don't know what it means, and I was just about to do that anyway.
I was about to describe him as a congenital liar. I mean, I think it's in his hard drive. He's just not good at telling the truth. It doesn't bother him, and he's led a life where he was able to get away with it. Remember, this is the guy that invented John Miller, the spokesperson for Donald Trump, the real estate magnate, who would make calls to magazines and talk to journalists as his PR guy. But it was Trump on the phone. He was misrepresenting himself. He was just saying, oh, this is John Miller. Same voice, same vocabulary. You know, Trump's a great guy. He could have any of the hottest women in Hollywood or in New York. And that's Donald Trump's, you know, regard for reality. He's a congenital liar, says his attorney. What does congenital mean, Elif?
Congenital, of a person having a particular trait from birth or by firmly established habit.
Okay, so yeah, that's just who he is. Congenital, genetic, whatever.
I can't wait to use that for the first time.
Just drop that on someone.
Yeah.
Be careful. By the way, Elif, do you have the news clip, too? So we do have all of these important topics. You have Donald Trump. You've got the Senate confirmation. You have the Van Dyke trial. Here is today's news clip.
Are Bert and Ernie gay? A. Yes. B. Probably, but it doesn't matter. C. Probably not, but it doesn't matter. D. No.
Kevin, how are you going to answer that in sports? Violetta, how are you going to be answering that? Steve, you don't have to answer that. I believe that would be beneath the dignity of a newsman. Sports and traffic, not so much.
I don't think it matters.
I don't either.
I miss this. Why are they in the news?
Bert and Ernie have been outed.
Hasn't this been like a ongoing like idiotic joke for like 30 years now?
Yeah.
I mean, even if they are, who cares?
But there's an LGBTQ blog, and they asked the guy that wrote the storyline for Bert and Ernie, and he said that he based them on him and another guy, his partner, and what their relationship was like. So he said essentially they're gay.
So what does it matter?
Well, then you would answer.
Because people are angry, people are gay. I mean, that's the bottom line.
I think that we don't want to think of our Muppets as having an orientation.
I just don't think that they can be sexual in nature.
Can't I just watch Muppets in peace without political debate? This is like the football and kneeling thing. Can't I just watch football without political debate?
There
seriously.
You have it, the old man Muppet in the balcony.
I love that. Kevin, that's you.
2018 is wild, man.
The only one that really worried me, and when I think about the cartoon characters and storybook heroes of my youth or my children's youth, it was the man with the yellow hat and the monkey. You know the guy I'm talking about?
Curious George.
I was a little curious about what all was going on there.
Kyle Hendricks?
Kyle Hendricks, what are you talking about?
If you watch Kyle Hendricks play and then think of the man in the yellow hat, it could be the same thing. It could. Just watch. Just say. I'm just saying.
Sometimes we collectively as humans think too much.
Yes, I do say that.
We just think too much, I think.
It's totally there. And then that monkey he's got with him.
Curious George is my boy. Used to have have him on my bed every night. Little stuffed animal.
Yeah, we read the stories to the kids.
I was a big Curious George fan.
He was a troublemaker.
He was.
Yeah, but was
he curious?
Was he gay?
Was he gay?
Was he gay? That's the only thing that matters here.
No, but his was
But listen
over?
To this. So here, don't worry, we'll wrap this up now. A lot of people are looking at their watches. Here is a comment from, I think this is Frank Oz. He said, Sesame Street has always... No, this is the comment from the Sesame Workshop. Sesame Street has always stood for inclusion and acceptance. And that's true. They had a character that was HIV positive. I think they've had gay adults or characters. Obviously, they've crossed racial and gender. It's been very inclusive. So Sesame Workshop says, Bert and Ernie were created to be best friends and to teach young children that people can get along with those who are very different from themselves. And Frank Oz, who is the voice of dozens of Muppets and was, you know, one of the early collaborators with Jim Henson, he said, look, I created Bert. I know Bert. Bert was a friend of mine. And, sir, you're no Bert. He said, I created Bert. And he did not imagine Bert as a character with any orientation, certainly not gay, but they didn't address his heterosexuality either. He was just a guy with a friend named Ernie, right? He says, right. I know who he is. But at the end of this, he says, I've been tweeting way too long about this, but it was good. And I learned something profound in this sort of Twitter back and forth he was having with readers yesterday. He said, thanks for those who tweeted with me. Next time, I would be very interested to know if Bert and Ernie were indeed gay, would they be different than they are now? And I think that's a great question because, okay, make them gay. If they're gay to you, they're gay. If they're straight to you, they're straight. It doesn't matter, does it? Straight or gay, they're two nice guys who are teaching people about friendship and acceptance. So that's really where that conversation should end. It is at 2:21. This is WGN. A more serious topic, two of them still to come. We'll visit with Erica Harrell. She'll be on a phone, right, Ms. Garris? She'll be on a phone, the Republican candidate for Illinois Attorney General. We're going to play the ad that she's running against her opponent and the ad her opponent is running against her. We'll ask her about the truth of each.
I don't need a fishing pole, Bert.
What? Hmm. Well, how are you going to catch all these fishes without a fishing pole?
Oh, you see, I call them. I have this special fish call, and they come right into the boat.
Hey, John, we grew up with Kermit and Miss Piggy being a thing, yet the message when it comes to gay Muppets is they're Muppets, they don't have an orientation. So if you can have heterosexual Muppets, by the way, crossing species, why can't we have gay Muppets? And hello all from 847, regardless of the writer's contribution to Sesame Street, it was just teaching people to get along. I agree. Thanks for your text messages on that. Hey, I've got good news. We're moving on. Remember now, in the next half hour, Erica Harrell will join us, the Republican candidate for Illinois Attorney General. Read Mary Schmeek's column in today's Chicago Tribune. It is, as always, a really good piece of writing. And in it, Mary writes about the Kavanaugh hearing and what might happen on Monday. And as I said a little while ago, and paraphrasing it, let me just read the way Mary wrote about it a little bit. She reached out to a friend and said, what do you think of this Brett Kavanaugh situation? And the woman wrote back, I believe it's a woman. She said, I believe the woman. The woman, Mary Schmeek writes, is Christine Blasey Ford, a psychology professor, who says that one night when she was 15 and Brett Kavanaugh was 17, he pinned her to a bed at a party, tried to remove her clothes, put his hand over her mouth to muffle her screams. In 2012, she told a therapist and her husband about it. The Washington Post has reviewed the therapist's notes. When Kavanaugh made the short list of nominees, she contacted her congressional representative and the Washington Post. Later, she told Dianne Feinstein, the senator from California, her senator, but asked that it be kept confidential. And the woman that was talking to Mary Schmeek about it said to Mary this, I wish we lived in a world where a man could say that he did a terrible thing when he was a kid, and he did not realize until many years later how truly horrible it was, and that it shaped his life in ways that made him go out of his way to help victims of similar assaults, and that he had often thought of contacting the woman to apologize for his terrible behavior as a drunken youth. I wish we lived in a world where that sort of reparation was expected of someone who does something horrible and whom we expect to live to regret it. And I wish we could forgive without taking anything away from the horror of the assault. Because it seems like if you accept that, then you are also saying, oh, well, then you don't think it's so terrible. But no, maybe it can be both. Christine Blasey Ford has told the story, Mary Schmeek wrote. And while it's not proven, it is credible. She has nothing obvious to gain by exposing herself this way and a lot to lose. I so agree with that. It's a story we need to think about. And I think that's well put. And these men that are on this Senate Judiciary Committee.
They don't say it that way.
Wishing they weren't, these men on this Senate Judiciary Committee are trying to find a way to interrogate this woman on television. And that's a job that they do not want. So some of them have said, okay, let's have the female staffers that work for us. They can ask the questions. Imagine that. I mean, really.
Who said that? Really?
That's been floated as an option. Chuck Grassley said I could send some staff to interview you privately. We'll go out there. But none of them want to be on TV seen as harassing this woman in this day and age.
Well, but then there's the other twist of her now calling for an FBI investigation, which
I think is totally prudent.
Do you? I don't think it's her call.
Well, sure. I can call for anything. You can call.
True.
You want a ham sandwich? Call for one.
I do think it diminishes her. I think it adds to the difficulty for her. I understand why she would hope that this would be borne out in an investigation. But
sure. Well, I mean, would some evidence be nice?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think I don't think a witness is in position to say, I'll testify, but only if you do this.
Well, I don't think the rules have been written about this. I get it, Steve. That's not the way a normal criminal or civil case might be handled, but
I think she loses I think she will lose some support over that. That's
otherwise, all you're left with is she said this, he said that, and I think Brett Kavanaugh has a lot of support on his side. I think if she thinks there's evidence that would help her out, it doesn't hurt to ask for it. Maybe the evidence won't. But what's the harm? What's the rush? I mean,
Here's the point: is that in a perfect world, I understand that we'd have all the time in the world. But the fact is that there are accusations that this is political and that this came up at the last minute for politics because they wanted to delay it. And now when she comes forward and says, yes, I'll tell you my story, but not next week like you want, only after an investigation by the FBI, which could be a week or weeks or months, I think that that is evidence to those who say this is all a delaying tactic.
I think
she might be sincere or not. I'm just saying her opponents can say now, look, the Democrats are just trying to push this back.
Kamala Harris said that over 60% of the women who have been sexually assaulted do not report it. 60%, which is funny because how did we get that report? But she said over 60% of the women who have been sexually assaulted, At least don't report it right away. But to your point, I'll just read this, then we'll do the news. John Cass said this in the Tribune today. Watching the slow public evisceration of U.S. Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh by Senate Democrats on the strength of one unsubstantiated charge of alleged sexual assault 36 years ago, he called it an aggression, when Kavanaugh was in high school, a question comes to mind. Have you no sense of decency, Senator Feinstein? Yeah, maybe she is using this as a political delay tactic, but it doesn't change the sincerity of the charge. Maybe it's both. This is John Williams. Erica Harold wants to be the next Illinois Attorney General. Her opponent is Kwame Raoul. They're both spending money, or their people are spending money on TV and radio ads. So this is the ad that Kwame Raoul is running, which wants you to know this about Erica Harold.
You still won't believe what Erica Harold believes. We know she discriminate against a loving gay couple who want to adopt a child, favoring an abusive straight couple instead. But she also supports a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage and would even allow employers to fire workers just for being gay.
Ed goes a little bit longer than that, but those are the two charges. So they're not giving up on the fact that they want you to know that once she said that she doesn't think a loving gay couple should adopt that kid, and now they're saying she wants to ban gay marriage and you should be able to fire people because of their orientation, too. Erica Harold, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good. Nothing like joining right on the hot seat.
Oh, I know. Don't you just, I mean, isn't this enough to make you not want to run for public office?
Well, it's enough to make me want to fight to make sure that the public knows the truth and for them to know why my opponent is misstating my positions. And so just to clear it up, there's a reason why these ads have been rated as false. I would not discriminate against people. I would uphold the law, and I want to make sure that everyone's treated fairly and equally under the law. And that's my position. But my opponent keeps deflecting, distorting, and lying about my record because he actually has a record of 14 years of raising taxes in Springfield and not standing up on behalf of taxpayers.
Let's just, I want to play an ad that he is, or that you are running against him. This is, but I first, I'm most interested in what he is saying about you right now. So just answer a couple of questions about this. This came up in a pageant that you were in years ago, the first allegation that you would hand the child to the maybe abusive straight couple as opposed to a loving gay couple. Can you just comment on how that came up?
Issue came up for the first time in March of this primary when anonymous sources went to NBC and said that that is what they recalled my answer was in a pageant. As I stated then, and as I've repeatedly stated, I don't recall that specific exchange. If that was my answer, then it was wrong. But I've been clear from the time we've discussed this in March that I support the right of same-sex couples to be able to adopt and be foster parents. So what makes his ad false is that that is not my position, and he has no basis for saying it. What makes it particularly disingenuous and hypocritical is that in his own professional life, as an attorney, he has actually gone into court and argued for children to be returned to a home of an abusive mother. So he's putting out these defamatory attacks against me to deflect from his own professional record of actually as an officer of the court going into court and arguing for a child to be placed back in an abusive home.
Just answer for me then what your thoughts are about gay couples now. Should two people of the same sex be able to marry?
That's the law of the land. I've said that over and over. And to continue to make this race about false statements regarding my position is an insult to the voters who deserve to know where we stand on the issues that matter to them,
so
that the next attorney general will be able to address.
So you're also saying then that your personal view on that doesn't matter. Your job is to uphold the law of the land.
Every attorney general's job is to enforce the law, to uphold the law of the land, and to make sure that people are treated equally under the law.
I understand that, Erica, but would you say that your personal opinion about that matters? Should I know what your view is on same-sex marriage?
I've just told you my view. My view is that that's the law of the land and mm-hmm. that we should uphold that.
Well,
and that's
John's,
what we need to be able to enforce.
I think John's asking about
and
your personal view, though. I mean, personally, when you're at home, do you think it should be legal or not? Aside from, we all appreciate
personally at home, and in any other aspect of my life, I believe that we need to enforce the law and enforce people's rights.
Okay,
and
Erica,
to continue to
we
have,
hear you not answering the question.
I've answered the question, and the reason why we're continuing to focus on this is it's a distraction and a distortion from the fact that I've made clear I will uphold the rule of law and respect the rights of everyone.
So if
what
an employer...
What we need to be talking about...
What we need to be talking about, I'm sorry, finish that thought.
What we need to be talking about is what are the issues that the next attorney general will actually be making decisions on. Issues like the consent decree, issues regarding redistricting, issues regarding workers' compensation reform, issues regarding criminal justice reform. There are a host of issues that matter to people in this race. And we should be focusing on those issues where the attorney general has the discretion and will have the ability to set policy for the state of Illinois.
Well, okay, so then, and I'll talk to you about that. I don't want to dwell on this, but I just have one more question about this, and that because he's you can't turn on TV, you don't hear him saying these things about you, but he says that you think that an employer should be allowed to fire somebody because of their orientation, and I suspect you're
it's
about to tell
absolutely false.
Okay, but I suspect that you're about to tell me too that if that's the law of the land, you'll uphold the law of the land, and I want to ask you if, in fact, that's your personal view, and I expect you're going to tell me that your personal view is not relevant here.
I'm sorry. Since you asked the question and answered it for me, I'm not. What is the question?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, do you think that an employer should be able to fire somebody because of their orientation alone?
Of course not.
You do not feel that way. All right. Well, but in the commercial, he said otherwise, right?
Because, and that's why his ad is false. That's why it's been rated as false.
Your
ad. Of course, I don't believe that.
Your ad that links him to Mike Madigan about raising property. Steve, you had a thought? Or
you know,
question?
Erica, this is unfair and we're piling on. I'm sorry. So I'll just try one more time, though. If you're willing to say that you don't believe an employer should fire an employee for sex, why weren't you willing to say whether or not you think two gay men should be able to be married?
I've answered the questions repeatedly.
Okay.
And I think it's important that we continue to move forward. I think it's important that we continue to respect people's rights. And I've continued to answer this.
I know that.
And
it just doesn't seem to me like that's such a toxic answer.
I think if you're going to bring someone on and ask them their positions about various issues, you should let them answer the question. And I think you should also take into consideration there's a reason why this ad has been rated false. Because it does not reflect my position. And I've been forthcoming about my positions. I've been repeatedly forthcoming. And to continue to focus on comments that anonymous sources allege that I made when I was 19 in a beauty pageant is a disservice to voters who deserve to know about how the next attorney general will focus on issues that matter to them. Additionally, it's a distraction from the fact that in my opponent's actual professional career, he's actually argued for children to go back into the home of abusive parents.
Is this
that's
a specific case?
Way in which,
and that's a specific
yes,
case evidently you're referring to. I'm not familiar with that. When did that happen? Can you tell me more about that?
It was in 2001, and I'd be happy to provide the citation.
Yeah.
It's where he represented a mother who was trying to regain custody of children that had been taken from her because her home had been found to be an injurious environment. And Senator Raul represented this person. The appellate court found against him and did not find that it would be appropriate for those children to go back into someone's home because it was back in her home because it was an injurious environment. That's actually how he has handled himself as an officer of the court. And I think we need to focus on ways in which people have actually handled the power that they've been given.
Yeah. Well, that's clearly something that we'll bring up with him. If you can give us that citation, I'll be happy to raise that with him when he joins us. And the Chicago Sun-Times today, they also rate as mostly false. The Better Government Association, which runs PolitiFact Illinois, rates as mostly false your ad where you say that he and Mike Madigan had a scheme to raise property taxes in Illinois. Would you comment on that?
I'd be happy to comment on it. CBS did a fact check and found that my ad was true. But the specifics of that ad focus on a piece of legislation in 2014 in which Senator Raul and Speaker Madigan were the chief sponsors, co-sponsors of legislation that would have allowed the city of Chicago to raise property taxes. And that's a that's an undisputed fact that that's what that legislation would have allowed.
Yeah, that would have allowed that as a result of Mayor Emanuel asking them to do it. And it wasn't just to raise taxes, but there was a reason for it, given the budget crisis that we had. And the Sun-Times said Harold's claim spuriously suggests that Raul teamed up with Madigan for the express purpose of hiking taxes, leaving out all mitigating context. We rate it mostly false in the paper today.
As I'm sure voters are well aware, politicians always come up with rationale for raising their taxes and trying to raise their taxes.
Yeah.
And it's an undisputed fact that they did team up as the chief co-sponsors of legislation that would have allowed the city of Chicago to raise property taxes. And regardless of the rationale advanced for that, that was what they chose to do.
And in fact, the tax hike portion of that, what happened to the tax hike portion of that bill?
After there was a public outcry over it, it ultimately was taken out of the bill because people really objected to the fact that the pension issues were going to be addressed by levying another property tax upon taxpayers.
So the ad makes it sound like they did scheme to raise taxes and did, but in fact they did not. Your view must be that that's beside the point they were going to, right?
Our ad said that they teamed up to do something. They, in fact, did team up to allow property taxes to be raised. The fact that they failed in that objective doesn't change the fact that they teamed up to do that.
This is very helpful to us, Erica, because I just think that we see these commercials and we're all sort of the victims of them. That is, one side will say one thing, but they don't tell you the other. Of course, they wouldn't. But I think if you are willing to come on and address these issues with us, that very much helps our listeners get a better sense of what's going on here. And I really appreciate your time. Next time we visit on this, we'll talk about those issues that you were bringing up a little while ago. But I wanted to address those commercials and get your side of it. We're going to offer him the same opportunity. And please take our invitation to come into the studio sometime, and we'll talk about some of these other things like consent decree, et cetera, that you talked about.
I'd be happy to do so.
Texter says, why doesn't Erica accept the fact that Kwame Raul was just advocating on behalf of his client? By the way, I'm an attorney and a Republican. But this texter from 630 says, hey, I want to vote for this woman. She wants to keep property taxes low. We got too much property taxes, too much taxes in the state of Illinois. I'll vote for her if that's a vote for low taxes. Hooray, hooray, said 630. Erica thought that we were going to play her commercial, which attacks Kwame Raul, as we played part of his that attacks her. I guess that's fair.
In Illinois, politicians have turned corruption into an art form. I'm Erica Harold, and this scheme is one of the worst. Mike Madigan and Kwame Raul team up to raise property taxes. In Chicago, Madigan's business does property tax appeals for the powerful. Higher taxes, higher profits. And Kwame Raul, his top donor gets massive tax breaks from the county while you get higher taxes. I'm Erica Harold. As Attorney General, I'll make the politicians pay for their corruption, not you.
That's her ad. She says that CBS rated that true, and the Sun-Times today, they rate that mostly false. We'll invite her into the studio again to talk more about the issues, but that's the way we see the ad.
Hello, John.
Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
I wish I had more time, because this is what I want to say to Erica Harold. I want to say you can say you're personally opposed to same-sex marriage in Illinois.
I agreed.
You can say that, and you can say, but as an attorney general, I'll do whatever the law says,
I'll
which she did say. But when we said, yeah, but he said you're against it, how do you feel about it? She absolutely, absolutely would not answer that question. And then she says, I just did answer the question, and I don't think she did.
Well, it's probably not an issue she would deal with in that role, so I think there's a political answer to that.
But I'm not sure that's true. I think now, depending, you don't know where the Supreme Court is necessarily going to go on these things, and they will be sending things back to the states for state approval is the way they will get around.
But don't you think the most important answer for her, though, is I will, advocate for the law. Whatever the law is,
that's
what
right,
I'll do.
Because even if it came back to the states, we would have a state law, and she'd have to respect that law.
So she's saying none of your beeswax is essentially what she's saying.
But I think you're right, because I think we deserve to know where people stand.
Well, he's charged
that part.
Don't tell me you answered that question if you did not answer that question, because she didn't answer that question.
See, this I was just complimenting you off the air.
You were.
I was just saying to Anna that you are so good at making things understandable, simplifying and making complicated things understandable, unlike me, who make simple things complicated, right? You're the exact opposite. And I was listening to, you know, what you were saying there when you were going into the break, and I thought, that's exactly that. You articulated that beautifully, which is the problem. But that's what politicians will do, because here is something else to consider. And I know we're going to run on this note, but the other thing to consider is that state's attorneys general get involved in lawsuits, right? States attorneys general banded together to try to take down Obamacare, try to take down
tobacco.
You know, and in this particular case, they're going to go after states' laws against laws on Roe versus Wade if there's a Supreme Court turn here. And the same thing could be said for gay marriage potentially. And the real question is, would Erica Harold, as the Attorney General of the state of Illinois, act in concert with other conservative attorneys general throughout the nation and go after those things? I think that's a legitimate question.
Yeah, I didn't ask that. So when you guys talk to her, ask her that one. Mr. Complicated.
Yeah. See what I did? I made it more complicated.
We'll do the complicated interview.
I made it complicated.
No one will understand it, but we'll do that one.
My head hurts. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.